Hello and welcome to the bi-weekly meeting podcast for the OWASP Top 10 for Large Language Model Applications. If you'd like to stay up to date with our project, please click subscribe. And if you enjoy the content or have any questions, please feel free to comment and share. Now, on to our meeting.
So we're about 4 after. A little lighter meeting than we normally have. So part of the reason I'm late today, I'll wait for Aubrey to get back. I'm not sure how far away his coffee maker is.
Welcome to our OWASP Top 10 for LLM meeting for March 14, 2024. I'm sorry I couldn't be here in person today. Thanks to the great success of this project and the positive response to my book, I am being kept very busy. Sandy Dunn offered to lead the meeting today, and she is pretty good at herding cats. So, with her coordination and the great people we have on the call today, I'll catch up with the recorded video later provided from the excellent editor, Aubrey King. And of course, if you want to contact me before the next meeting, the best way is in the Slack channels.
So what I did was I cloned Steve's voice and I uploaded some new text so that he would say it. And this is, I took Steve's image and had it create an avatar from it. So this is Steve's image. If you upload Steve's picture, this is the avatar that you get. So from Steve, he's been out presenting his work, the work that our team is doing. Fabulous reception. I think anyone who's been asked to go do a podcast or webinar to talk about the OWASP Top 10 or the checklist, the feedback we're getting is just phenomenal. And what I'm hearing consistently is what they really like about it is it's they understand it. It's simple. It has pictures. There's explanation. They can follow it. You know, there's a lot of resources out there, but they're not that user friendly. So, you know, whatever formula we've figured out, it's absolutely resonating with everybody. Gavin, who was very involved in 1.0, and Steve were asked to present at RSA this year, and they've submitted their draft presentation prior to the RSA show in May. Steve also proposed a birds of a feather session. If they get accepted, he's really hoping for an in-person meetup for anyone going to RSA. He wanted to reiterate, you know, we have a lot of people asking permission if they can go out and present our material. OWASP, as you guys all know from our licensing, it's as long as you just credit it back to, you know, where you got the information, anyone is free to use any of our resources and present. I mean, our core mission is to really raise visibility and help people get in front of these issues. On the 2.0 version, I just want to stop. Does everyone know where to find the brainstorming doc that we've been using for brainstorming? Okay, good. Seeing some nods. Okay, make sure and go out there. I mean, as you know, Steve has made it really clear, this is a community project, and it's okay if there's tension, if people disagree, if they want to have discussion. You know, we're very open to that, as long, you know, keep it friendly, keep it nice. But we really want, you know, the outcome is through discussion that we all agree on what our mission is for 2.0, and we go on and duplicate the success that we've had with the 1.0. After they wrap up the brainstorming session, he's going to identify the core team. There's been a lot, you know, a lot of people, as everyone knows, who is part of any kind of these nonprofits, they can take up a lot of your time, and pretty soon, you know, you're trying to balance work and family and projects and stuff. So people, you know, they come in, they contribute a lot, they cycle out. So he'll be looking at identifying people for the core team for 2.0. He also wants to review the group charter. That was really important for the 1.0 version. You know, anytime there was any kind of a discrepancy or we got muddled in the argument, we always went back to the charter to say, okay, wait a minute, what's our mission? What are we trying to accomplish? So he wants to revisit that. So that is Steve. You know, I honestly do not know how Steve does everything he does. I mean, he's just everywhere. And you know, a lots of very positive reception for the OWASP Top 10 for his book. I mean, it's really having a positive impact on the community. So again, Gavin and him talking at RSA. Brainstorming, I guess I should have been going through the slides as I was going through the notes that he sent me. So again, you know, really looking for, you know, please, this is a community project. You know, the more that you guys come in and contribute, the better it is for everyone. So with that, I believe that these are from, does anyone know whose slides these are? Is this Scott? Okay, good.
Yep. These are my slides, I guess. So I can go through them where we are right now. So first thing is just letting folks know that the standard deck 1.0 is published. So we've gotten that first version out, still looking for input on version as we go forward. Sandy, thanks for dropping those additional slides in. That helped to kind of help round out the story for the governance doc. So that's great. There's two components to it. There's a summary set of slides, and then there is also more specific around the threats. All these are editable. That was one of the points that came through. I think the slides that we have that were publicly available were not editable. These are now editable, so you can customize them for your deck. So this gives us a standard deck to use in all pitches. These are some of the slides that Steve pulled on, and then we'll incorporate more as we go forward. As Sandy mentioned earlier, I'm in the process right now of working with the RSA team on a potential seminar and meetup. I'll have more information on that this week. We already have the couple of sessions that are scheduled. We're hopeful that we'll get a slot to do a meetup and deep dive, very much like one of those sessions that's been done by the Cyclone. The RSA team, obviously, we came into this a little bit late. They're working right now to try to find space that makes sense. So depending upon what they come back with, we'll determine whether or not it makes sense for us to go forward with the space that they have. Obviously, we came into this a bit late for RSA, but we have been working on the inside to kind of get this a place to have it. So the sponsor program, we're approaching finalization on the program, including both the gives and gets. The one thing that we're looking at right now is hoping to finalize kind of any Q2 funding requirements by next Monday. So if anybody has any of that feedback coming in, that's going to help us to start doing outreach to help get funding to support those activities. We've got including the website. We also have worked with the OWASP team to figure out where we can provide both gets for the people who sign up, and that way we can have a clear idea of what the, you know, gives and gets are for this. So that should be wrapping up by next Monday, and I'll get the final details out around that.
Okay. And so just for my education, Scott, so if we have, when somebody sponsors a project like this, you know, how are those funds allocated? Is that something that the sponsor has some sort of influence on, or is that something where you and Steve work out where the funds are distributed?
Yeah, so what we're doing is we're making sure that we have a budget ahead of time in terms of where we want to have the funds allocated. And those funds go towards kind of, you see this middle slide there, they're prioritized based on basic requirements. That's sort of the brown. The yellow gets us into, you know, more activities that we want to do, more things that we need to fund, and then the green funded for a target funding for activity. So the idea is this is progressive. And we're going to hopefully, you know, continue to fund more and more stuff. But it depends obviously upon what the funding comes in from the different parties. OWASP provides us some level of basic funding, so we have that, and I have that detailed out. So when we have activities and things we want to do, I do have the funding for that after working with the OWASP team. Then we'll make the determination on this. So when people come in for a sponsor, there's already OWASP has a back end that allows us to manage the contribution, and that contribution goes specifically to the project. If they are already an OWASP corporate sponsor, they can allocate 10%, up to 10% of their contribution to a particular project. So that allows us to kind of work with existing corporate supporters of OWASP if they want to allocate some of their funding toward us. That allocation still is managed on the back end. So we'll be, between Steve and myself, we'll be managing kind of the where we use the dollars. But that's based on input from the team.
Okay.
Now that's a long answer to your short question. And then we're also looking at exploring, putting together more of a solution guidance doc, going to the next step of helping to, we've already have the top 10, we have the governance checklist, which is our great tools. And then the next step is, can we provide organizations with more guidance around what are the solutions they should be looking to, both for, either from an open source perspective or commercial solutions, providing a little bit of guidance. We don't want to get to the point where we're not, we want to maintain that openness and neutrality of the organization. We want to see how far we can get in terms of providing, you know, insights into where should I go, especially as a lot of these new threat vectors are coming about. This is calling for new kinds of technology solutions. And then there's also a lot of this can be covered by existing solutions. So for organizations trying to figure out where do I start, I think providing them with a way to navigate that first step is kind of what the goals of this document are.
Okay.
And this is just a reminder that for everybody, if you have events that you want to share and want to get promoted, that you can go to the form on the website, sign that up, and it'll be added to the wiki calendar. That also helps Aubrey because he can also then see activities that he can then promote. The key here is it's ideal if we get a couple of weeks ahead of the activity, because then that gives Aubrey and we can use other channels to kind of out. Closer to the date, the harder it is for us to leverage those channels. But there is, you know, there is an awareness channel that the community has that gets out to 5,000, the 50,000 some odd, you know, members. So that's one good channel. And then obviously Aubrey's doing a great job through the social media and other channels, word out there as well. So just a reminder to, if you have speaking events, if you have attending events that you want to promote, please make sure that those get added to the form so they can get added to the events calendar.
No, I just, I appreciate, I mean, it just goes to show just the power of having multiple faceted, talented people on a team. I mean, this is really adding kind of the next, we were all doing so much. But it was kind of, and Aubrey can probably attest to this, it was a message to Aubrey in a Slack channel. Hey, I just posted this, or I'm in this meet, you know, I'm in this webinar today. So having some a method like this really helped everybody kind of get it on their mind and start kind of being more organized about it. So really appreciate it, Scott.
It does. In fact, I looked at the spreadsheet just before this meeting to see if I needed to make any kind of pump up videos for anything coming up, and the next one's in May. So as Scott said, if you're out there and you're going to be speaking, please, please do the outreach.
That's really, really a great, we were doing a lot, and now we're just capitalizing and being able to be more efficient and letting people know what everybody in the group is doing. So for the OWASP Top 10 for LLM Security and Governance Checklist, again, just reiterating, as I go out and talk about this, in some ways, I'm not to Steve's level, but anytime that you're you do something like this and it's super popular, you almost become a victim of your own success, because then you're overwhelmed with requests and webinars, and you know, your busy life gets even more busy. But the feedback that I consistently hear from the top 10, our checklist, or from the checklist and from the OWASP top 10 for LLM, is people just love it. It's understandable. It's simple. It's actionable. So again, just want to reiterate just the excellent work that was provided by this group. For the checklist, I'm really in the early stages. I'm trying to do too much. I'm trying to figure out. I've got my finger in so many different things right now. I feel like I'm doing a lot of stuff, but not very effectively. So I'm trying to figure out how to prioritize a lot of that. So hopefully we'll be able to reduce some of the areas that I'm contributing, so I can focus more and therefore contribute at a better level. I'm really at the idea stage. I'm really looking for everyone's ideas and contributions. I moved the Google Doc to my OWASP account. I had an issue with my OWASP email account that took me about 6 months to resolve. I finally have that done, so that all of my OWASP work, I'm now trying to do all of that out of my OWASP account. I posted the new shared document in the channel, the primary channel that we use for this document, which is Team LLM AI Security. One great accomplishment from Cedric, and Cedric just did this. I just received a message in Slack, hey, I converted the checklist to French. I was like, what? You know, really? And, you know, he posted it, you know, I sent it to Steve and we were able to announce it. So just want to say to anyone who's on this call, who watches the YouTube later, thank you so much. Like, that's anything that you would like to do. I talked to Cedric and I said, hey, if you would like to modify this checklist so that a lot of there's more French legal, I touch on a little bit of the US stuff. So if you wanted to modify it and make it more, even more customized for France, that, you know, I'm perfectly open to that. Again, this is all open source, you know, really any of, you know, certainly my work, I just want people to use it. So please take it and do, you know, make it useful for you and your community. Any questions, you know, does anyone have any feedback for me on the checklist or things that you'd like to see? All right. Well, we didn't get any other updates, so we're finishing in record time today. Does anyone have any other topics that they wanted to discuss? I had one, and again, this is, we could do it in a Slack channel. We could do it. I'll bring it up here. One thing hit me. I was reading an article about how someone was able to do ask a chatbot within the Amazon shopping experience to reverse shell, write a reverse shell for Python. And it wasn't clear to me. I think it just gave him the instructions on how to do it. I don't think it actually modified anything. There was a lot of blurred activity in it, so I wasn't exactly sure exactly, you know, what they were pointing out. You know, apparently, obviously, Amazon probably doesn't want their chatbot telling people how to do a reverse shell in Python, but that's more of an output error, you know, kind of the functionality of the chatbot. But what hit me as I watched it, and I watched it kind of take off and people kept liking and commenting on it, was one of the things that we've practiced historically around vulnerabilities, not always well, I mean, not everyone did it, but responsible disclosure. And I noticed with the prompt injection stuff that it really is about, you know, hitting Twitter or hitting LinkedIn or whatever your favorite communication channel is, that you were able to do whatever this thing was. And just wanted to hear your guys' thoughts on responsible disclosure around prompt injection.
Boy, that's a tough one. As somebody who takes part in disclosure, I think there has been some talk about this out there in the community about how really prompt injection is a hard one and not necessarily actually a software problem or a coding problem. Like, we intend to have it do these things, so yeah. Very difficult to disclose something that's built into the code. That's the hardest thing from my perspective, again, as somebody who is part of the disclosure process for a software manufacturer. I don't know if anyone else has thoughts on that. It's just a difficult topic in my opinion. And so many things with AI especially with LLMs have, the same problem. It's built to do all these things. So.
Yeah,
I think I was just going to say, Sandy, I was talking to you about this recently as I was doing research. I've been trying to collect all the confirmed known threat actor uses of AI and ML or LLMs in cyber attacks. And the difficulty about that is compounded by the people who are in the best position to see how threat actors are using these tools are the owners of the tools themselves. And they have there's a conflict of interest there, right, for their disclosure. Now, Microsoft and OpenAI have been pretty good about sharing that we know of, but there's no regulations requiring them to share. There's a lot of reasons for them not to want to be open about malicious uses of their models. And then the other problem is, if I'm a forensics responder who I'm looking at an attack, there are some specific artifacts and things that we should be looking at from an incident response and forensic standpoint if we want to try to figure out if threat actors used AI or LLMs that's not standardized and nobody looks for that, right? Like, a really good example was actually excellent work that was done by Mandiant. They discovered a PowerShell script, and when they looked at the PowerShell script, the commenting in the PowerShell script like tickled somebody's brain, and they're like, wow, this looks like it was generated somehow through an LLM prompt. And sure enough, was able to use like specific language that was in the commenting of that script to tie it back to a specific LLM. But that isn't being standardized. So I think there's a real problem right now with visibility into attacks that I don't see any current regulatory standard or even best practice, frankly, that is addressing that.
Yeah, and I think one of the other things that makes it difficult is that there's the what we'll call closed models, which today is a large majority of what people are using, but we're also looking at the expansion of open models and their deployment. So coming up with some guidance that can be applied to both is challenging, but it's something that really doesn't exist today.
Yeah, and it was really interesting too, I think, also on the side of like responsible disclosures and how some of this muddies the water. So I was looking at JFrog's report. It kind of got sensationalized in the news as Hugging Face has a bunch of malicious backdoors inside of models, right? But if you dig into JFrog's report, they actually openly admit that they believe the majority of what they found were actually researchers trying to research how models in Hugging Face could create backdoors. And they actually only found two that the backdoor that was open connected to an IP address that was known associated to actor infrastructure. But there was hundreds that were done with research. And this is actually why I went down this path of trying to document what threat actors we have confirmed and how it's been confirmed and who confirmed the uses of this, because the majority of what is out there in terms of using even open models, or say even these called black hat GPTs, are mostly researchers and theoreticals and hypotheticals, right? And so if you're a researcher and you're doing these things, what is your responsibility to then notify Hugging Face or OpenAI, like, hey, I'm doing research about how, you know, it's going to look malicious. Like, if you're looking at your models, if you're looking at these prompts, it's going to look malicious, but I'm actually doing research. You know, other things, we have a process for bug bounties, right? There's some structure around like responsible disclosure and responsible research around bug bounties. But this, the AI and LLMs, especially the way a lot of these are being shared and like the Hugging Face model, I actually dug through the Hugging Face like agreement when you start using it, and there was nothing in there about you need to tell us if you're doing this type of research. So I think that's also a significant gap. I'm not sure how we in this group might be able to speak to that or address it, but I think it's a significant issue and it's a significant risk.
Yeah, lots of that. And I know that there's bug bounties. Hunter has their bug bounty program, but it's, I believe that it doesn't cover prompt injection. And I think I was reading another one. I think was it Bug Crowd, Aubrey? Like, they specifically don't accept, or maybe it was, I was reading one, a bug bounty, and it, maybe it was OpenAI's, where they, you know, say that, yes, please report vulnerabilities to us, but we don't reward on prompt injection. So yeah, I agree. It's kind of a new, interesting space.
Even like the Hugging Face ML models that had these like silent back doors, like technically speaking, like when you look at the agreements, there's nothing requiring me making an AI ML model in Hugging Face to disclose to you the code that I'm going to produce for you is going to open a connection to your machine. It's going to open a back door. It's, you know, there's nothing that requires that. And there's nothing that requires me to tell Hugging Face, hey, I'm doing research about that either. And I think both are a pretty big issue.
I think as much as we don't want any more frameworks to be added into the mix, because it's already a lot, it will come down to having a specific framework to address that, and like a playbook in which how can you have the proof of concept of what you've done. I think that can help answer some of these questions.
There's a lot, though, it seems like, with AI that I keep scratching my head at, going, man, this is more like, you know, cybersecurity for AI seems more and more like the same cybersecurity for people, right? I mean, it's a lot of defense against social engineering and things like that. And I can tell you, as you know, as someone that works for a WAF vendor, you know, we are our focus on learning for prompt injection and or defending against that is really learning over time, like any other advanced web app firewall would do. You know, you have to have an understanding of what is an acceptable prompt to be injected versus what is a malicious prompt or could cause, you know, something unintended and whatnot. The other thing that is very odd when it comes to at least defending against it is this idea of bidirectional WAF. As again, as a WAF person for a very, very long time, I'm used to thinking of WAF as inbound, but what we're talking about is setting up outbound web app firewalling rules, which seems bizarre. But really you're doing the same thing, strip the SSL and then really focus on what is that, if we're talking about not direct prompt injection, but indirect prompt injection where it forces the model to go out and find something and get injected. That would, we really need to outbound WAF where the model is the consumer. So again, I'm not sure that we can patch that in code. So then again, I don't think we'll see it much in terms of disclosure.
No, I think we covered. I think it's, again, reiterating some of the issues that people already talked about. I think having sort of at least starting to write down someplace some of the guidance that we see, the gaps that you are seeing, might be helpful. I'm not sure if it comes into a framework, as Emmanuel said, but maybe even just starting to explore what a framework might look like, or at least the issues that are out there that you've been uncovering when you're doing your research and understanding, obviously, the challenges here around disclosure. People don't want to disclose things that they can't control, right? So, but are there some basic guidelines or guardrails around disclosure that we can start to see people adopting? And I think that could be an interesting piece of content to start with and then start evolving over time. I don't know if I'm suggesting a new document for a framework, but perhaps.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, Emmanuel. I don't know if I want another framework.
I don't for sure.
Same. I mean,
we don't need another framework. We have more frameworks than we know what to do with. But the question is, which has been the appropriate framework for this kind of guidance to fall into?
Well, that's right. And of course, it makes it challenging for all of the vendors, not just WAF vendors, having to like ingest all these frameworks into product. So
yeah, to just show where it goes. Well, that really is what we had to cover today. Is there anything anyone would like to add?
Yeah, I got one.
Okay.
I was just going to bring up something that I've seen a little bit out of some DOS vendors out there in the news, and one thing that I have fought in my own company is this to try and get an understanding out there of the difference between model DOS and DOSing a model. So if there's if there's nothing else I can say about this point, I guess one of the things that I'm seeing is that a lot of DOS vendors are coming out there and saying we defend against model DOS as per the OWASP top 10 for LLM apps. But when you're just adjusting rate limiting for inbound connections, that is not defending against model DOS at all. It could be where, if you've got a human that is taking a look at the application and saying, boy, my application is messed up. I better adjust my DOS settings to help my application, which happens to be, LLM based. That's one thing. But again, that's not really protecting against model DOS, it's protecting against DOSing a model. And it seems per our docs that there needs to be some sort of communication on what is happening with the model to influence automatic defense in terms of DOS. So I just wanted to kind of put that out there and see if anyone else is kind of has noticed the same thing. Because it is something that I'm trying to make sure that I know my company isn't going out there and speaking incorrectly to say these things.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect example of kind of why I was thinking more toward this sort of solutions-oriented doc to provide some guidance around what the solution could potentially be. So we're not communicating things that aren't aligned. So the top 10 does a great job of outlining what are the potential challenges or risks, but providing some guidance on what the DOS example is a perfect example of where people may be whitewashing or AI washing products. And so that's not really helpful for people trying to really address the problems, but understanding without becoming, but still remaining kind of neutral, I think this is always a challenge, is how can we provide at least a little bit of guidance that people can look at. Maybe it takes the form of a checklist, maybe it takes the form of some description. So the first cut I was looking at with doing was at least starting to come up with some descriptions around some of the solution areas so that people could get an idea of what is the right way to talk about the DOS solutions, which ones have an impact and which ones don't. Look at that across the major functional areas that everybody has. So inbound, outbound, WAF, is that what we're talking about when we're talking about these firewalls? I'm not sure, but you know, that's part of the guidance that people go to. Can the tools that I, solutions I have, open source stuff I have, help solve these issues today? Which is just, which ones are just AI washing? Is there some help that we could provide?
There is a lot of that. And I hope that, you know, all of us who are involved with manufacturers are trying to do our due diligence to help our companies say, you know, hey, wait, you got to get your terms correct here. That's, you know, and I find that's not happening. It seems like I just posted something about, you know, hey, how to sell anything in 2024. Just say it's LLM based. Here, buy this pen. It's LLM powered, you know.
We all remember what happened with gluten, you know, all of a sudden everything became gluten free, you know, your ketchup was gluten free and never, yeah. You know, there was no gluten in it to begin with. Right. So yeah, it's the
gluten free coffee right here.
Gluten free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as a kind of standard or guidance body, you know, how far can we, or should we go? And, you
know, right.
Trying to avoid that.
But yeah,
that's why I'm open for comment on that document. Figure out how can we do this in a.
I don't know that. I mean, it would be almost impossible to police all of it. You know, everyone out there going, yeah. You know, going out and making those claims. But I think it's a reminder to all of us that anytime, you know, somebody puts a marketing spin on something and says that they do think, you know. Trust but verify, and go in, well, what do you mean by that? And which is, you know, why I'm such a huge fan of taxonomies and metrics and, you know, definitions, so that we all agree what we're talking about. So.
Yeah, I mean, this is not an organization to police anything, but it is an organization that kind of educates. So,
yeah. Other things. Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. No, it would reflect badly. I mean, we certainly don't want people out there, you know, abusing the hard work that we all donated our time to contribute to, and they go out and try to, you know, misuse it to sell a product that doesn't help their customers. That would not be good. So, no, I appreciate it, Aubrey and everyone. Emmanuel,
we'll be adding one more item to the events list. I just got a message. It looks like we'll do there's going to be a meetup with the Silicon Valley OWASP chapter in San Francisco on April 24, where they're asking for a presentation on the OWASP top 10 and details. So we have one more thing to add. That list. So I'll put that on the list.
Yeah, and Scott, you might want to hit one of the Slack channels again. I know I missed it. You know, I haven't been updating. I'll go out after this call and update the things that I'm doing and where I'm talking. So it wouldn't hurt to just over communicate, you know, the ask and the benefit to Aubrey and everyone else to be able to see what everyone's doing so we can communicate on it.
Yeah, I think we have to do that over communicate. I've been I've been offline for the last 4 or 5 days, so I'll see about how we can communicate that again.
Emmanuel, you didn't have time to throw a slide in, but since we have a few minutes, did you want to provide any kind of an update?
Yeah. I've been a bit busy and no new updates from my side. I'm just busy with the data validation Python code that I'm working on. And as soon as I have more of a body, I'll share with the group.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right, guys. Going once, going twice. All right. Thank you, everyone. We'll see you in the next meeting in 2 weeks.
Thanks all.
All right.
Thank you, Sandy.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thanks for checking out our bi-weekly meeting podcast. If you'd like to stay up to date on all of the latest news for the OWASP Top 10 for Large Language Model Applications, please click subscribe. And of course, we'd appreciate it if you'd share with a friend to grow our community. We'll see you in 2 weeks.